I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast.
Hello, this is John Anilio. That is Patrick Hester. He is an author, a blogger, and a podcaster. You could check out his website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a teacher and a podcaster. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Today, we're joined by Jason Sizemore. He is a writer and editor, and in his bio, it says he's a hillbilly. He's the owner of Apex Publications, science fiction, fantasy, and horror books, and he is the editor-in-chief of Apex Magazine and the author of Four Exposure. Jason, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me, and yes, I am a hillbilly.
I assume like that is your, you know, you can call yourself hillbilly, but me being from, you know, New Jersey, I shouldn't be allowed to call you hillbilly. I'm assuming.
Oh, well, how about redneck? Are you more comfortable with
that? John, I used to tell people I was half Irish, half hillbilly.
That's where the, a lot of Irish down south, that's where all the bluegrass music comes from, at some point, the Scottish and Irish music and all that kind of stuff. So, as it's true, you know, Jason, when, we were, planning on doing the show, cause you know, Patrick's Southern, roots come right up. And I noticed from looking at your Twitter feed the last couple of days, you have something out there called, I believe it is Kentucky Kaiju. Please explain Kentucky Kaiju and how is Patrick Hester not involved in this? That's my question.
Yeah, I don't know how Patrick somehow slime his way into the. It's a field guide for the Kentucky for the monsters of the bluegrass state. So Kaiju, when you think Kaiju, the obvious example is Godzilla, and of course Pacific Rim really popularized the monsters here in the past couple years. And the idea wasn't mine. It was from a gentleman named Justin Stewart, who, when he pitched it to me, oddly didn't include Patrick Hester in the pitch. I apologize, Patrick. I was like, wow, this is brilliant. You know, you have monsters that, are addicted to like Mountain Dew and just silly stuff like that.
No cheer wine.
And cheer wine. No, you know, that's not a Kentucky thing.
I know. It's more like a Virginia kind of thing.
Yeah. That's more Southeast Coast. Mm-hmm.
But you know, John, I don't know if you're aware, but there is an Apex item that's about to hit shelves here soon that does have something of mine in it.
Mm. And what is that?
Upside down inverted tropes. Is that?
Yeah, upside down inverted tropes in storytelling, edited by Monica Valentinelli and Jam Gates. It comes out in mid-December. It was a Kickstarter project, and we're currently doing fulfillment to backers right now.
And let me explain how this went, John. I got an email from Monica that said, hey, James said you might be interested in writing an essay for this anthology we're doing with Jason over at Apex. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she said, I need to warn you now, we're doing this as a Kickstarter. Your stuff would probably be one of the stretch goals. There's no guarantee that we're going to hit it. But if you're interested, I need to know now. I'm like, sure, I'm interested. She's like, okay. And then they launched the Kickstarter. And she's like, okay, we launched the Kickstarter. Whether we actually get to the stretch goals or not, you know, you never know with Kickstarter. And the next day she sent me an email. She said, start writing because we hit our stretch goals. And I went, oh.
Yeah, we had an incredible number of backers. We had 1,400.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. Patrick, is this the piece that you had spoke about when you were saying like, oh, this will be a nice contract to the more like intellectual pieces that are in this?
I do. I always tend to, my humor is self-deprecating. So I'm always like, yeah, you know, all these really smart people are writing essays and then I'm going to write something. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great though. That's great. Well, we got lots and lots to talk about with Jason. But before we do that, I want to take a moment to let you know that if you enjoy the show, if you enjoy hearing interviews with folks like Jason, please consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can back us at $1 a month. You can back us at $5 a month, whatever works for you. $1 a month ends up being about a quarter a show, depending. We usually do a show every week. So if you get value out of the show, if you find some cool new things, cool new books and TV shows and things like that, that you learn about through the show, consider becoming one of our backers, once again, over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. And now on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Jason, do you have a pick prepared? I don't know if you have a book or something that you'd like to recommend to people.
I do.
Okay, what is your pick?
I just recently finished the Nick Mamatas novel, I Am Providence. Have you guys heard
of that? I have. I got an arc of that sent to me, yes.
Yeah, it's a murder mystery set at a Lovecraft convention in Providence, Rhode Island. Yeah. And cool. It's kind of a playful jab at fandom, particularly Lovecraft fandom.
Are you a Lovecraft fan? Are you a Cthulhu kind of person?
I am ambivalent. I recognize the importance and how cool that stuff is. As far as reading and following it, I do not.
I do enjoy all the games that have been coming out lately that are kind Absolutely. Of inspired by that. Like there's now a Cthulhu Pandemic version. Mm. You know, Pandemic being the game, John. I don't know if you've ever played it, where it's you are like CDC people. You're trying to contain an outbreak. Mm-hmm. And the Cthulhu version is you're trying to contain the old ones and keep the madness from spreading.
Mm.
It's very cool. So stuff like that I like. This book sounds like it kind of merges a couple of really great genres, which would be, you know, that kind of horror Lovecraftian thing and then a mystery.
Yeah, it's really just straight up mystery. Just happens to be set at a Lovecraft convention.
Okay.
There is some inside baseball with it. You may recognize a few of the characters as being rough caricatures of people you may know in Lovecraft fandom.
Okay. Well, and Nick's a great writer anyway.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Excellent. Very good. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
I'm going in a different direction. I'm going with the CW's new lineup.
Okay, they
basically have a week of superheroes now.
So
you've got Supergirl on Monday with her less famous cousin kind of showing up now. Mm-hmm. You've got The Flash on Tuesday. You've got Arrow on Wednesday. And then you've got DC's Legends of Tomorrow on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty much, it's like they've got the superhero block now. And mm-hmm. it's interesting because they have been doing this for a while, and I think they've kind of proven that they do superhero shows pretty well on the CW. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And to have this kind of block is mm-hmm. is very interesting from a programming perspective. I also have to say, after watching the first episode of Supergirl, I don't think it's spoiling anything for everybody to know that Superman showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And across the internet, people were kind of going, now DC has a problem.
Because this Superman is probably way more likable than the
this
movie
Superman.
This Superman
is way more likable. People are enjoying him. They're enjoying the actor who's playing him. He did a fantastic job. He's like the Superman that people actually like.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they've got an issue now. What are they going to do? Because they've got the Superman at the movies that nobody likes. And now they've got this TV version that everybody likes. It's a problem.
Jason, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't really follow the whole superhero comic book universe stuff.
Mm.
That is my one big failing as a geek.
You know, you can't follow everything. Like, because there's always going to be someone like, how are you not into Doctor Who? What is your
Exactly.
It's like,
how can you not be into Doctor Who?
Well, Jason, I just have one question for you.
Yes.
Would you care for a jelly baby?
But Patrick, to my thoughts on that are, I think since last we spoke, I watched all of the first season of Supergirl on Netflix. it was a slow burn for me. I was like a little ambivalent towards it for the first couple of episodes, but once it got cooking, I really did enjoy it quite a bit. I thought they, you know, as a lot, even though it was a Channel 2 show or a CBS show, I should say, last year, it did have a lot of those sort of CW show reveals throughout the first season that were like,
It's the same production team is why.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. No, I know it's a Berlanti show and it's in the Berlanti verse and all that. So it's, it's all good. Funny enough, like I am not watching them now because they were on Hulu the last 2 years and that's how I used to watch them. Now the CW has an app that I can watch them on, which I'm sure is fine, but I pay for the commercial free version of Hulu. Mm-hmm. So I watch everything with no commercials now, and I can't go. If it was one show, I'd probably be okay, but it's like, no, I'm not watching four. I started doing the math on it, cause I'm like, let's say they have 10 minutes of commercials per show, which is probably about where they're at.
An episode is 22 minutes long and the rest of the time is commercials.
It's 44.
44 so 44. Okay. So 22 minutes of commercials, I think.
Yeah. So, let's say even if you just get small and say 10 minutes of commercials per episode, that's 40 minutes of commercials a week. And I'm like, you know, I'm not sitting that. And I know that Netflix has the rights to all that. And they're going to air like 8 days after the season finale. So I'm like, I'll wait till it's all on Netflix.
Right. And so we're going way down a rabbit hole over here. But then you go, if you're not watching it and it's not hitting the numbers, then there might not be another season.
I know. Right. Well,
and here's my question. In the video, Jason is smiling as you're talking about Hulu and commercial free. Jason, do you use any streaming services or do you watch regular TV? Do you care at all about any of this stuff? Is your nose always planted in the publishing of Apex?
Commercials they're things of evil. I'll just put it that way. No, I'm like John, I'm spoiled now. I have the commercial free Hulu. Mm-hmm. I also have Netflix. Mm-hmm. Commercials, I just can't abide by them. And when I do have to watch the networks, I have a TiVo that, you know, I'm able, and even fast forwarding now, that 15 seconds, I'm like grouchy about it.
Yeah. Well, you know what I think will probably happen? And when they do, I'll probably do that. I'm assuming because this is the CW's first, you know, shot at an app that they're doing it this way because this makes the most sense. But I'm fairly certain that at some point now, maybe not be for another year, they will have a paid version where you don't have commercials. And I'll gladly pay, you know, $5 to $10 a month because I watch all those shows to watch them without commercials. But for right now, I don't want to sit through the commercials, even though it's free. So that's where I'm at with that. Cool. My pick real quick, I'll just pick one of the recent books that I read. And it's a book that's been out for a while. Wow, it's 10 years, according to my Goodreads. And that is The Lies of Locke Lamora by Scott Lynch. This is a book that I feel like everybody in our community has read already. And it was one that I bought as a Kindle Daily deal, like probably 5 years ago. And the audio book was, you know, once you bought the ebook, the audio book was like an extra $4 or something. So I bought that and I finally got around. I was a little hesitant or just scared of it because it's like a 22-hour audio book. And I finally just was like, you know, I'll do it. And one thing I will also recommend using the Audible app is doing the double speed, the 2x speed. Because that helped make it less daunting. Because I realized, like, oh, it's not going to be 22 hours. It's going to be 11 hours.
I've recently looked at some audiobooks, John, and I was like, man, I should get that one. And then I looked at the time on it, and it was like 36 hours. And I went, whoa.
Brandon Sanderson's The Words that's of what Radiance is 45, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little daunting when you get up that high, but the book's great. I know why everybody, you know, whenever you see these books that like everybody in your community reads, you're like, I bet that's probably pretty good. And it is. It's great. It's I think a lot of people know about it, but it's, you know, it's about a
you know what? It's okay. It took Scott a long time to write the sequel, so it works out for you.
Yes. Yeah. Because that book is, like I said, 2006. And then I guess the next one took a couple years. And then the next one took quite a few years. And they're still waiting on the fourth one, I think.
Right? He went through some stuff. So, yeah, I give him a huge pass. He was going through some stuff.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, and the audiobook narrator is excellent, too. So.
I do want to throw it out there, John, that in honor of our guest today, I'm drinking sweet tea. But apparently I should have been drinking Mountain Dew.
Yes.
As Jason holds up his can of Mountain Dew.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Jason, you know, one of the reasons you're on the show today, besides to talk about Apex, is that you guys... Before we get into one of the things, why don't you explain to us a little bit about what you do with Apex and what it's all about for maybe our listeners that are unfamiliar?
Apex is a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror press. It's comprised of two arms, Apex Book Company, that publishes stuff like Upside Down, Inverted Tropes, and Storytelling, and the Apex World of Sci-fi or of SF series.
Which is Levy, and also, right? Is that Levy Tadar?
That's Levy. And on the fourth volume, Mavesh Murad. And the second arm is the Apex Magazine. It's at apex-magazine.com. And it's a short fiction zine. Probably most people in the biz has heard of it. I don't know if everyone reads it, but they should, because we do some pretty good sci-fi, dark fantasy stuff.
I introduced someone to Apex at Worldcon this year, and I don't know if Jason remembers her, but she was losing her mind trying to pick something to read because there was so much stuff on his table, and she was like looking at things for that she thought her daughter would like, and things that she would like, and she was just going all nuts on it because there's such a diversity of stuff to choose from, which is, you know, it says a lot about Jason and his team.
Thank you for saying that. That's good to hear. We do work hard to be different and diverse and inclusive. That's always been one of our goals with the business.
Now, when did you get started with this, Jason? Like, when did, like, sort of the company come into existence, and how did it come into existence?
Early midlife crisis. I turned 30. I was at a dead end job. I just had my first kid, and all that hit me at once. And I was like, okay, other than a kid, what have I done to leave my mark in the world? Nothing, not a thing. And I wanted to do something that would be a positive for people and bring people entertainment and something they could look forward to. So I decided to start a magazine. It was called Apex Digest back then, and it was a print publication that eventually morphed into digital only. And after a couple of years after the magazine opened, we started doing books as well. And our first book, a horror thing called Egg Gray Somnia, picked up a Stoker Award nomination, and I pretty much had the bug after that.
Yeah. Now, how do you go about now in terms of the, picking stories for the magazine and for what books you'll publish? How does that process work? I mean, is that mostly you? Do you have other people kind of helping you out and picking stuff? Like, how does that work for you?
People ask me this all the time because it seems like it's a magical lottery thing to be selected for publication on the book side. But in reality, probably the best way and the most common way that I find books is through the magazine. You catch my attention through Apex Magazine with your work. It could be even just through the slush pile. I may see your story or see you submitting multiple times. You may not make the publication, but I'll be like, okay, this person's very interesting. And there have been times where I have queried them. Do you have any like booklet projects or anything? Once in a blue moon, we will have a open call. Those are kind of hard to do though. We did one last year and for 1 month, and it ended up getting like 600 manuscripts.
It's a flood.
It was just too many.
Yeah.
And we did look at every single one and ended up getting some great books that have been coming out this fall, but it was so hard. And I have a very small team out of necessity. Such is the life of a small press publisher.
Yeah. Now, so that's kind of, in some ways, that's sort of the traditional way that I think authors would trying to start their career would be that they would do a lot of short stories for a long time and then sort of work into novels. And I think in recent years, that's not necessarily the way it goes, but in terms of how Apex goes about it, that seems to be kind of the trajectory that authors are working with.
Yes, and there have been a few times where people have put a little bug in my ear. Authors and other editors that I respect will say, you know, so-and-so is doing some really good work. Maybe you should check them out. And so, you know, people are doing this, you know, like a Nick Mamatas or a Maurice Broaddus. They have pretty good taste. And, you know, if they say I should check something out, I'm going to, you know, take a moment and see what they're talking about. So it's a thing where if you are producing quality work, often you will be found. Quality work really does float to the top, despite, you know, all the naysayers who often say there's like an evil gatekeeping core. In my experience, that's not been true.
Now, let me ask you this in terms of getting stories. Now, I was thinking about this recently. Quite a few years ago, I wrote and released a song about National Novel Writing Month. And someone had posted that on Facebook the other day because they're getting all ready for National Novel Writing Month. So do you get an uptick in submissions on December 1st after everyone's completed National Novel Writing Month? Have you found that to be a busier time of year for yourself?
You know, I would never open to novel submissions in December. Never.
Here's my advice to anybody who writes a novel during NaNoWriMo. Edit that sucker before you even think about sending it to someone. I can't tell you. It's like, I don't know. People are just like, oh, I've written this perfect thing in 30 days. I'm going to send it off and get it published. No. No.
Well, yes, it's National Novel Writing Month, not yes. National Novel Editing Month or national. That's the whole point. But you know what's funny with that is that in the many years that we've been doing the show and interviewing lots and lots of authors, you know, a lot of your favorite novels out there started as NaNoWriMo novels.
Oh, sure.
Quite a few of them. I think a lot of authors, you know, still participate in it as, you know, for just because it kind of works for them, and maybe it's a bit of a community building thing. And sometimes what they work on in that month ends up getting published.
It also flexes your writing muscle, John, because as Chuck Wendig likes to talk about, you know, you do have a writing muscle, and it's your brain, and it has to be challenged just like any other muscle that you're working out, you know. And so NaNoWriMo is great for getting you into the habit of sitting down and writing every day. Because if you want to make that 50,000 word goal, you're going to have to do that.
Yep. Well, I know. I've never written anything in my life, but I did NaNoWriMo twice and did 50,000 words. Steaming piles of crap, but, you know, I did it. Now, Jason, why don't you tell us about the pledge drive that you have or that you're going to be starting very soon. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that in order to make Apex even better.
Yeah, starting Monday, October 24th through November 15th.
Okay.
We're having our annual Apex Magazine subscription drive.
Woohoo!
Yay! And this year we have a goal of making $10,000 through this drive. And our objective with that money is to increase our pay rate to 8 cents a word for original fiction, and increase our monthly original fiction output from 12,000 to 16,000 words.
And what does the subscriber get?
Well, they get 12 issues of Apex the Magazine. They'll be able to get a subscription at a discounted rate.
Nice.
And when you get a subscription, you get the ebook editions, nicely formatted ebook editions of the content. And you get it weeks before it's posted online.
Nice.
Also. And this year we will have things like, you know, and incentives to go along with subscribers. it's not a pledge drive so much as think of it as kind of a free form Kickstarter Indiegogo thing, because we're going to have tiers. Mm-hmm. And if we make 10,000, we will be hitting our main goal objective of raising our pay rate to 8 cents a word. If we make 8,000, then I think we're going to be doing moving up from 12,000 to 16,000 words. There are stories to unlock. Like, we have stuff from Neezy Shaw, John Horner Jacobs, fan favorite Ursula Vernon, and a Jackson Circus story from E. Catherine Tobler.
Wow, all good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you were in talking about the Kickstarter, you know, so it's sort of like a yearly thing that you do. You know, we mentioned it early in the show about the Patreon that we do, which I don't know how much you know about that. I mean, Patreon is essentially like a ongoing monthly right. Kickstarter. Have you ever looked into doing something like that?
Yeah, we do have a Patreon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's one way that people will be able to subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, our Patreon hasn't been our focus because we've been pretty successful generating mm-hmm. what you would call just standard subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
We're up to nearly 1,500 now paying wow. subscribers.
That's awesome. I don't know, if John, if you're aware, but it's at least the Kickstarter projects that I've seen Jason and Apex do with various editors and, you know, writers, they always seem to fund and they always seem to go beyond that, you know, and hit stretch mm-hmm. goals and stuff. So from a subscriber standpoint, you probably have a really good shot at getting a lot of that extra stuff mm-hmm. as this goes on. And from the writer standpoint, it's going to be awesome because I have no doubt that Jason will hit his goals and then writers get a little extra, you know.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. The way I see it is the way we've structured the tiers, that if we make our goals, the readers win because we'll have more content.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. if we make our goals, the writers win because they will be getting paid more.
Which is awesome. And then does that translates to professional credit?
Yes, it is. It's we're a Science Fiction Writers of America certified professional market. Woo-hoo. So any sale you make to Apex Magazine counts towards
is it three?
Yeah.
Yeah. To get CEFWA membership, John.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
The cool Nebula voting CEFWA membership level.
Sweet. Well, I think the Kickstarters and Patrons and all that kind of stuff, I think it's what's so good about this is because people who like this stuff, like our listeners, you know, it gives them an opportunity to get more than they were ever able to get and to support at a higher level. Because, you know, in the past, it's just like, you know, many years ago, it's like, well, you'd go into your bookstore and hope they had stuff that you liked and you'd buy what you'd like. And that would be about where it would end. And maybe you would take books out of the library or something. But now, if you're into this stuff, there are so many ways that you can get as much of it as you want and get as deep as you want with it and really support it at a level that you would want to. So I love to see the success of stuff like Apex and everything else. So
is there a website where people are going to go and be able to support you?
Yeah. If they go to apex-magazine.com, mm-hmm. there will be a primary landing page for that.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Awesome. Very good. And I should also mention that you can follow Jason on Twitter at Apex Jason. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's a Twitter handle there. That's right.
And best occasionally, of luck. And occasionally you'll see Jason at conventions and he'll be either in the dealer's room or on a panel or something.
That's right.
What do you I'll have upcoming with that? Yeah. What's any upcoming conventions that you're going to be at?
My next one is World Fantasy in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
Next weekend. Sorry.
No, October. You're right. As we're recording this, it is next weekend.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's the World Fantasy that we went to when it was in Columbus. We should have gone this year. Right, it was in Columbus.
Yeah, it was in 2012, I think.
I feel like
10,
was it? Yeah, 2010 sounds about right. I don't know. The years just fly by.
Yeah, they did.
It's the first time Matt Patrick and I met in person.
And DiNardo. And
DiNardo, yeah.
It was funny because the two of you were just kind of like, yeah, we saw you across the room.
I saw I'm 5'8". DiNardo, I think, is not quite that tall. And Patrick's a big, tall man. And so when I saw Patrick and DiNardo walking in the lobby to meet me, it was a hilarious sight because I felt like I'd known these guys my whole life, and it was the first time meeting them in person, and to see like the size disparity between the two of them was quite hysterical. So there you go. All right. Well,
was it awkward?
No, it was fine. It was awesome.
It was awkward later. I'll explain it.
Yes. off mic. But Jason, best of luck with everything. We hope you guys meet all your stretch goals. For us, once again, if you dig what we do, go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and become one of our patrons. And we'd like to thank all the people that already back us. Thank you very much. It means the world to us. Patrick, anything else that you'd like to
say? Nope, I just want to tell people go out and check out Apex because it's awesome.
Sweet. All right, everybody. Have a great week. We will see you next time.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?